All right, throughout Easter time, we've been going through making sense of the resurrection. And we've done this through the story in John, the previous couple weeks. And I didn't feel right about going through Easter time this year without talking about Emmaus Road. Emmaus Road is probably my favorite of the resurrection stories in Luke. I guess whichever one I'm preaching on that week turns out to be my favorite one, to be completely honest. But part of what I like about this story is the journey, the wrestling, the figuring out, the not quite getting it, the making sense of the resurrection in process. We kind of get this slow snapshot of the two followers of Jesus returning home, not knowing what is going on. So I'd like to kind of make this sort of a bridge message in some way of making sense of things. And I think the story of Emmaus resonates so well with me because so much of our journey is in that time period of trying to figure out what is going on. How does resurrection make sense in our lives? And so I think the story of Emmaus really fits well with our Christian journey as we sort out, we try to make sense of what God is doing and how we can be involved in that, especially when we are facing difficult situations and we're confused and we're trying to be like, God, where are you? What's going on? I can't believe these things have just happened. How do I make sense of this? So I really like Emmaus Road for that part of the journey. So let's read Luke 24 together. It's on page 1608 in your pew Bibles. That same day, two of Jesus' followers were walking to the village of Emmaus, 7 miles from Jerusalem. As they walked along, they were talking about everything that had happened. As they talked and discussed these things, Jesus himself suddenly came and began walking with them. But God kept them from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing so intently as you walk along?" They stopped short, sadness written across their face. Then one of them, Cleopas, replied, "You must be the only person in Jerusalem who hasn't heard about all the things that have happened there the last few days." "What things?" Jesus asked. "The things that happened to Jesus, the man of Nazareth," they said. "He was a prophet who did powerful miracles, and he was a mighty teacher in the eyes of God and all the people. But our leading priests and other religious leaders handed him over to be condemned to death, and they crucified him. We had hoped he was the Messiah who had come to rescue Israel. This all happened 3 days ago." Then some women from a group of his followers were at his tomb early this morning, and they came back with an amazing report. They said his body was missing, and they had seen angels who told them Jesus is alive. Some of our men ran out to see, and sure enough, his body was gone, just as the woman had said. Then Jesus said to them, "You foolish people, you find it so hard to believe all that the prophets wrote in the scriptures. Wasn't it clearly predicted that the Messiah would have to suffer all these things before entering his glory?" Then Jesus took them through the writings of Moses and all the prophets, explaining from all the scriptures the things concerning himself. By this time, they were nearing Emmaus and the end of their journey. Jesus acted as if he was going on, but they begged him, "Stay the night with us since it's getting late." So he went home with them. As they sat down to eat, he took the bread and blessed it. Then he broke it and gave it to them. Suddenly their eyes were opened, and they recognized him. And at that moment he disappeared. They said to each other, "Didn't our hearts burn within us as he talked with us on the road and explained the scriptures to us?" And within the hour, they were on their way back to Jerusalem. There they found the 11 disciples and the others who had gathered with them, who said, "The Lord has risen." He appeared to Peter. Then the two from Emmaus told their story of how Jesus had appeared to them as they were walking along the road and how they recognized him as he was breaking the bread. So, yeah, making sense of things. And I've already highlighted how walking and talking, I think that fits a good picture for our faith journey and our story. And I've shared over the past few weeks how I like to process things that I'd feel comfortable sitting on a boat just fishing. Not that I've fished much in my life at all, but that process of sitting in the boat, just kind of being in a quiet place, being alone with my my thoughts. And as many of you know, we adopted a dog in November. And one thing a dog affords you, especially when you don't have a fenced-in yard, is late walks at night right before bed. And I've come to really appreciate how wonderful the Saskatchewan skies are. It really is the land of the living skies. And I do find myself, especially on the Saturday night walks before Sunday, when I'm still chewing on that final portion of the message and how to tie it all together, I end up walking with Bree. And dogs are great conversation partners because they always seem to either agree with you, or when they do disagree with you, it's in a way that is, you know, the disagreements that you had already. And then so they're great to chat with. But often I'll find myself standing there, staring up at the sky, processing, wrestling, trying to figure things out. And Bree will be start chewing the grass or something, be like, oh no, I need to pay attention to this as well. But walking and processing and thinking is something I've come to really enjoy, and walking Bree has been very beneficial for me in sorting out my thoughts. These two followers of Jesus are on their journey back, and they're forced to wrestle with the events that had just happened. And of course, they weren't happy about these events. They were perplexing, they were disappointing. There was profound sadness in their hearts as they traveled back to Emmaus from Jerusalem. And then they had stayed there for Passover. They had witnessed the events and now were returning home. And so they're trying to figure out what is going on. And perhaps they're saying, like, did you think this was going to happen? Can you believe it? What is going on? And of course, in their story to Jesus, how they explain what has transpired, they talk about these surprising things that have happened, but they don't know how to make sense of it. They don't know how to make sense of the empty tomb or these surprising stories of angel appearances. They're still wrestling with what is going on. So they encounter this stranger. It's the Greek text has "their eyes were held," and this is one of those divine passives that the New Living Translation inserts God in the text. Their eyes were prevented from recognizing this person who is Jesus in the story. And Jesus asks them a question as they are walking along. What are you discussing so intently as you walk along? He inserts himself in their conversation, in their confusion. And it sets off this interesting pattern of questions. What are you discussing so intently as you walk along? And then Cleopas responds, are you the only one who hasn't heard what's going on? And then Jesus responds, what things? And there's a certain level of irony in this story, because Cleopas asked Jesus, are you the only one who hasn't heard? Like, are you the only one who doesn't understand all the things that have happened in Jerusalem? Come on. And it turns out that Jesus is actually the only one who understands what has happened in Jerusalem on this weekend. And so we, as the reader, we're able to appreciate the irony in the story. We're able to appreciate that Jesus knows what's going on. We are able to read ahead and expect what's going to happen. But in these questions, what Jesus asks of the two travelers to Emmaus is, tell me how you understand what is going on. Tell me how you understand the story that is unfolding. He invites himself into their place and gets them to say what they think and how they've experienced things. He listens to their place and allows them to process out loud what the events were and how they understand them, and how they understand the meaning of them. He invites them to sit, to give their story. What do you think happened? How do you make sense of this? And so in the responses, we have the followers explaining the events that happened in Jerusalem all up into this moment. And the closing phrase, which highlights their confusion, their frustration, their disappointment, is, we had hoped. They had hope that this Jesus they were talking about, the Jesus that is actually walking with them right now, even though they don't recognize it, would be the Messiah. We had hoped. So it highlights their disappointment, their frustration, their inability to understand yet what is going on. And so after listening, after walking with them for a time, as they tell their story, as they tell Jesus what they are experiencing, their feelings, their past hopes, he explains to them all the scriptures concerning him, all the scriptures concerning the suffering of the Messiah before entering his glory. And it's one of those things, wouldn't it be great if we had that sort of opportunity, that sort of access to Jesus walking next to us, even if we recognize him or not, and to explain all the scriptures in our confusion and what their meaning for our life would be, how to understand the implications of resurrection in all these situations. And wouldn't it be great if Luke would have been able to record for us the conversation and say, well, and then he went to, you know, Isaiah 52:13 and following, and he interpreted all that, and then Habakkuk 3 maybe would have made the list. I don't know. Here's hoping. But wouldn't it be great if we had that sort of opportunity? And what I'd like to highlight and interact with for the next few minutes is the space between verse 28 and the verse 29. As it came near the village to which they were going, Jesus walked ahead as if he were going on. But they urged him strongly, saying, "Stay with us, because it's almost evening, and the day is now nearly over." So he went in to stay with them. So the space between these two verses. And when I think of different decisions I've made in my life, some decisions you have lots of time to really contemplate the entire decision. All right, so this is, you know, make a list. I'm not a making a list person, but at least in my head, make a list. These are the positives. These are the negatives. These, if I make this decision, this is the probable outcome. If I make that decision, then that is the probable outcome. And I think this space between 28 and 29 is one of those split-second decisions that alter your life and your opportunity. Sometimes you're forced to make a split-second decision that you recognize, often only looking back at that split-second decision, about all its implications in your journey, in your maybe in a job, maybe in a relationship, maybe in many. The opportunities are endless in that possibility. But this is, sometimes you make those decisions and you recognize the implications later on. So in this moment, in the space between verse 20 and 29, the Emmaus Road travelers have the opportunity to let Jesus continue along in his journey. Perhaps they're just too confused, too disappointed, too frustrated to offer the hospitality that culturally they would have been expected to offer. Perhaps they would have kept their heads down and just let Jesus go along his way. They could have fulfilled the social obligation. It's been like, hey, you want to stay? You know, it's getting late. And then it seems to be a little bit in the text that Jesus made it more intentional that he was going to go on to make them make that decision to invite him in. And so this is the decision that they have to make in between verse 28 and 29. And of course, we know from the text that they urge Jesus, they beg him, they are able to convince him to stay, and they invite him into their place, into their home, through hospitality. Jesus is invited in. I think there's just a bit of space between 28 and 29 where those possibilities are at least there for that split second, that moment. What they say is, stay with us. Menon metha hemon. It's that word, the first word, menon, is one of John's favorite. We hear this all throughout 1 John. Abide with me, stay with me, rest with me. And this is one of those favorite words of John, to invite the presence in of, and the way we're supposed to exist in our relationship with God, with Jesus, with the Spirit, this abiding presence. So it's interesting to hear this request where they invite Jesus to remain with them, stay with us. And of course, this is the story of what we need to request of Jesus in our journey, is for his presence to stay with us, to dwell with us, that we may be able to sit, dwell, abide, remain in him. It's a deep question, a deep opportunity, a split-second decision that changes their life and gives opportunity for them to encounter the resurrected Jesus. And in this meal, this opportunity, in this stay with us dynamic, the guest becomes the host. He takes over the meal. He transforms the meal. He encounters them in a very intimate and a very deep way. What happens is he sat, he took, he blessed, he broke, and then he gave. And in this moment, their eyes are opened, and they recognize that this is indeed the resurrected Jesus who'd been walking with them along the way, who'd been explaining the story about himself, had been making it come alive to them. They recognized him in this action, in these actions, these quick successive verbs, invite them into this opportunity to recognize who this person is and was and will be for them. And so they're able to read back into the story, into the journey that they had been on. They're able to read back and understand what had been going on. And they say to each other, "Were not our hearts burning while he was talking to us on the road, while he was opening the scriptures to us?" They're able to read back and then have an understanding of Jesus' presence with them throughout that entire journey as they were wrestling, as they were struggling in their disorder, in their chaos, in their misunderstanding, in their frustration. Jesus had been walking with them all along. He is the very one that they invited in. So with burning hearts, they recognize who Jesus is, who Jesus was along the journey, along the path. And I think of these two kind of dynamics that flow out of this, this joining in the walk. It's that faithful presence of Christ in our lives, even at times when we don't recognize and we don't realize that he has been journeying with us all along. We're only able to read back, look back in the story of our lives and recognize that he was the one walking with us, making sense of it for us with his presence. And it's the opening of the scriptures, it's that shared story, that being able to more fully understand how we are part of that story that was written, that's written in the scriptures, that's told in Jesus' life and ministry. And this is how we're able to, looking back through our lives, recognize with burning hearts his faithful presence and recognize how he calls us to be in his story, make sense of our journey. So are we able to read back like the disciples and recognize him talking with us, his faithful presence? We're able to recognize the opening of scriptures, making sense of the stories. And so it gets me to think of this what if question. I highlighted the space between verses 28 and 29. What if they had just let Jesus continue on? And so it's this question of what did they know and when did they know it? Would they have had this moment of a burning heart and this understanding of Jesus' faithful presence along the way? Would they have the understanding of how the scriptures actually fit together had they not invited him in with hospitality into their place, into their confusion? Would they have come to this understanding, this moment? Would they have been able to make sense of things? And that is the opportunity for invitation. And part of the story is they don't recognize that it's Jesus they are inviting in. What they're doing is living out the implications of resurrection for this stranger, this remarkable stranger indeed, who's able to explain the scriptures to them. But it's a remarkable stranger. And they simply invite this stranger in. They extend the hospitality, the care, the love that would be expected of those who had been with Jesus, who had followed after Jesus. And in this invitation to this stranger, they are able to see the resurrected Christ. I think this fits as an analogy for our journey, our walk, our wrestling, our making sense of trying to make sense of the Christian journey and the resurrection. We have strangers, we have those around us who need hospitality, they need the invitation, and they need to experience the presence of Christ through our faithful presence with them. And so it's our opportunity to extend invitation, and this extending of invitation, even in our confusion, in our disorder, in our chaos, in our frustration, we allow the opportunity to experience Christ, the resurrected Christ, revealed in these moments, in these opportunities. And so it's our opportunity to continue on in this journey and recognizing that we don't always make sense of things, and we won't always make sense of things. Life throws these type of situations, these hurdles, these frustrations, where they just don't make sense. You can't really grasp hold of them. We live in this frustration, this disorder, this chaos. But it, like the Emmaus Road disciples, those who had followed Jesus, we're not allowed. That's not an excuse to hide behind or to hide away. We still are invited into participating in what Christ did in His death, life, and His life, death, and His resurrection. We're still called to live out His mission. And it's in this living out of His mission through presence, through story, through invitation that we are able to catch a glimpse of His glory revealed. We're able to catch a glimpse of who He is in this opportunity. We're able to help ourselves make sense of the gospel as we faithfully travel along the way, seeking opportunity for presence, for story, for invitation, reflecting that journey, that story that we see in Emmaus, both in the faithfulness of the Emmaus Road disciples and in the faithfulness of Jesus to be with them throughout that entire journey. And of course, the table is how they recognize Jesus in the breaking of bread. And Luke wants us to understand this passage of Emmaus as a communion moment, as a moment like the Last Supper. And if you've the last few messages with John, the two messages in John, I've been harping on how the feeding of the multitude of people is a Eucharistic moment, and how that ties into Peter and the other disciples recognizing Jesus in John 21, and that being a Eucharistic moment in the breaking of bread and fish. And Luke actually wants us to do the same. In Luke 9, in the feeding of the 5,000, and in Luke 22, at the giving, at the ordination of the Last Supper in Luke, these words are used in successive order, at least cognates of them. The only variation being gave thanks is in the communion story in Luke 22. In the feeding of 5,000 in Luke 9 and in Luke 22 uses the same succession of verbs to highlight the feeding of these multitudes of people as Jesus provides for their needs, for their sustenance as they are hungry. And in the giving of Himself as a new covenant, these stories are linked, and they are indeed again linked in the revelation of the resurrected Jesus and the understanding of the one who had been traveling along with them the whole time. So Luke wants us to understand the story this way. And that's one of the reasons why we do communion each week. Because whatever the chaos of last week was, whatever the disorder, the frustration, the confusion, the things we need to make sense of, we have an opportunity as we gather together in community, being faithful in our presence to one another, as we seek here, as we sing stories, as we reflect on the text, we seek to make sense of the story, the grand story of Christ in the world being revealed. We come and we gather, and we have an opportunity as we move from our seats, as we take a piece of the bread, as we break it off, as we dip it in the cup, as we partake of that, we have an opportunity to see Christ revealed. As we make sense of this story, as we make sense of our own journey, we're not called to understand each and every situation. We're not called to make sense of all theological things. We're not called to make sense of the frustrations or even the joys in life. But we're all are called to continue on in that journey. We are called to be faithful in our presence. We are called to share our story. We are called to invite people in, to extend hospitality, to share the journey with with one another. Because who knows when a vision of the resurrected Christ will be made apparent to us, we'll be able to recognize his presence and his glory in our lives, in our journey. We continue on in our journey. We walk and talk and we share. We break bread together, ready to have our eyes opened to the resurrected Jesus in one of these areas and dynamics, not knowing when it will come necessarily, but always seeking, always being ready. So tonight, we have an opportunity to as a community, gather to respond, to reflect, to think about how resurrection makes sense in our life, in our journey. We do that through response at the table. We do that through singing. We do that through our conversations after we share our stories. We share our presence with one another. So in the response time, I invite you to reflect and to think about ways that Christ is being revealed, even in your own story. And that's one of the opportunities. Our lives are busy, and it's part of the reason why Sabbath is a big part of the biblical story, is this pausing to reflect on the way that Christ is in our lives and how, and to make sense of what is going on. That's why we gather together as a worshiping community, to gather around the same table together to make sense of this journey.